welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson. I'm the Armchair Survivalist. Welcome to the show. If you go to... Oh, wait a minute. I got to tell you the date, don't I? So today is September the 13th in the year 2020. See, I never used to tell the date. I've been on the air for 25 years. I never used to tell anybody the date. And then people would call me up and say, what date was that show that you did on blankety blank? So... what the hell? I might as well give you the dates. All right, welcome to the show. Go to armchairsurvivalist.com. And you can scroll down to the bottom of that page, and you'll see ways to listen. I'm on Pandora, iHeartRadio, Spotify, you name it. I'm on every single podcast venue there is. I'm also on Global Star 3 Satellite. You can even listen on your phone, cell phone, hardwired, doesn't matter. Dial area code 641-741-0371. That's 641-741-0371. And look, if you have any problems with that number, it's usually because you are part of a cell system that is trying to limit how long you can listen, and they don't like people listening to radio shows because, you know, you burn up their bandwidth. So usually if you have a problem like that, they'll refer you to another number. You dial another number and you can listen. So it's 641-741-0371. You can listen in the chat room. You just, top of the page, there are these two links there. One of them says, listen to my show live Sunday in the chat room. Click on that. Boom, you're in the chat room. The next click, the link right next to it is, listen 24 hours a day to the recent show of the Armchair Survivalist. Click there, or here, and you can hear the recent show. I put the shows up as quickly as I can. If you want to download my show to listen later, on the left-hand side of any of the ArmchairSurvivalist.com website pages is the little white nipper dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. Click on that, and voila, you are now in the page that gives the chronological order of all the shows that I've done for the current year. And you can either play them there or download them for later. Now, everything I say is put together and placed on show notes for the show that I'm talking about. Like, to give you an idea, February 9th is non-electric lighting. February 16th is common sense security. So let's say you wanted, what is common sense security? Well, you would click on show notes, and that takes you to that show notes page, and you look down and you go, there's common sense security. You click on that, and that takes you to the individual page for that show. And it gives you all the links to all of the news stories I was talking about. So I don't just pull stuff out of the hat and start talking. I actually give you source so that you have the ability to go and see what's going on. So now, and I have different categories, by the way. One of them is economy, which we're getting into right now. American Airlines, and this is another one of these corporations that has decided to kiss the derriere of the racist blacks that are flexing their psychosis throughout the United States and world. So American Airlines has gone full BLM, Black Lives Matter thing. So they're posting BLM on their planes. They're doing all of this typical corporate propitiation to try and not get attacked by people. So instead, they're being attacked by people. And who's attacking them are the humans. The ones that don't fall for all this diversive, racist horse crap that BLM is pushing out. There's a lot of corporations doing this. It's astounding. They think that by kissing the rear end of these psychotic communists, that somehow they're going to come out ahead. It ain't working that way. Century 21. Remember Century 21? They always used to have nice ads, and all of their agents wore that gold jacket with the Century 21 logo on it. They're filing for bankruptcy. They're closing all their stores. I don't know why, because housing sales are going through the roof right now. But Century 21's filing for bankruptcy. Last week, I talked about how Discover has blocked a site that's raising money for Kyle Rittenhouse. This is the white 17-year-old white kid that was attacked by these murderous communists, and he killed two and wounded one. So he has some of the best defense that you can ever imagine in attorneys. But there was a website that was taking donations. And Discover, being one of these, as far as I'm concerned, communist corporate organizations, decided they would no longer allow him or that website to take Discover Card. So I'll have a link to that, and you'll find out where now Kyle Rittenhouse is getting money donated to, and you can find out and go there and do it yourself. Now, the liberal psychosis, this is based on the party of racism, intolerance, anger, hate, fear, jealousy. That's what liberalism is. Liberalism is nothing more than communism. Most people don't know where Democrats came from, though. They have no clue. So I'm going to give you a clue. I wrote this up a couple years ago. A guy named Adam Weishaupt, seeing that America would soon go to war against England, wanted to develop a form of government that could control the U.S. eventually. He was part of a international group that their members existed within each continent, within each major country. And they were pushing and developing means and ways to control that country. Soviet Union, China, not the Soviet Union, but Russian territories and Chinese territories and South America and Africa and all of these continents. They wanted to control them, to quote unquote guide them into civilization, because after all, they knew what's best for us. So these loose-knit groups formed an organization called the Illuminati. The Illuminati was formed in May, 2 months before the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776. The Illuminati is only 2 months older than the United States, and its whole intent was to infiltrate all nations and create the New World Order, which is the words they use. There were some organizations, some other things that they have done over the years. In 1780, they formed the Sunday schools, and these are schools where children were to go on Sunday to be propagandized. In 1792, the Democratic Republican Party formed. Now, before then, we had no political parties, because America is America, and what's good for America is logical. Well, they wanted to actually have a party of people who were known as politicians, so they formed the Democratic Republican Party in 1792. In 1820... Now, we're talking about the Democrats here, but they're not called Democrats yet, all right? These are the Illuminati, but they infiltrate all organizations. In 1820, work started to change moral order to social order in preparation for the one-world government. They want to have a one-world government, one-world religion, one-world money. In 1828, the Democrat-Republican Party split because the Republicans refused slavery and socialism. The Democrats wanted slavery and socialism. No Republican owned a slave. All slave owners were Democrats. In 1829, openly socialistic Fannie Wright societies and Working Men's Party formed to remove religion from schools. All of these things that we're hearing about that you would say are evil, every one of them was perpetrated by people who call themselves Democrats. In 1848, Communist Manifesto published by Karl Marx. Now, he'd been writing about communism since 1820. Communism is a word put to a philosophy that's been around for thousands of years. The Democrats have totally engulfed the concept of communism by this time. In 1849, the Democrats formed the National Teachers Association to promote universal education, not American education. That's what the NEA promotes. Universal education, or the United Nations education in this day. In 1902, Rockefeller founded General Education Board. Rockefeller is one of these Illuminati. In 03, Religious Education Association was formed. Nice words, huh? Religious Education Association. But its idea was to form a one-world religion. Again, these are all Democrats. The Democrats named their party the Democratic Party. And the idea behind that is a play on words. They wanted to make sure that the ignorant out there thought they were democratic, where in actuality, the Democrats are not democratic, especially because they spread racism and hate everywhere they went. The idea behind the Democrats is that the common man is too stupid to grasp how life should be, so the Democrats have to control them. They always push for the same thing, government control of all. Democrats believe in abolition of private property. They believe man has no soul. So when you hear these Democrats say, I'm a very astute Catholic, or I'm very religious, they're lying to you. They're flat lying to you. They believe no, man has no soul, so he can be murdered from inception up to and including right after birth. Man's thoughts determine his gender. So you can think you're female, and oh, look at that, you're female. All forms of sexual psychosis is 100% acceptable because, well, man has no soul, so what difference does it make who he messes around with? There are no borders. Everyone from every place in the world should be able to come in and invade the United States. White men and Republicans are the cause of all evils. You know, if you say a lie long enough and loud enough, the ignorant will start to believe it. Accuse your enemy of what you are doing as you are doing it to create confusion. Karl Marx said that. What else did the Democrats believe? That only the elite or their guards should have weapons. Now, this is not new. This has been around thousands of years. They started with knives and swords, crossbows, and then it went to firearms. History is fluid and should be changed to validate current thinking. You see what the Democrats are doing now. They're forcing revisionist history. They're tearing down all the Confederate soldiers and generals and all of this stuff. But why are they doing that? Because the Confederacy were all Democrats. Every single one of them were Democrats, and they were all racist. They all wanted slavery. So what they're trying to do is erase history so that nobody can look back and say, hey, who's that guy? What guy? There's nobody there. There's nothing behind that curtain. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. George Orwell. The Constitution is worthless unless it's used to defend their perversions. Morals are just words and have no meaning in today's society. These are quotes that I have picked up over the years. U.S. citizens have no more rights than criminal aliens. In other words, even if you are an invader from Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or some other third world crap hole, and you come to the United States, why, you have the power of the Constitution behind you. You have the rights to everything. Christianity should be destroyed in all its forms. Democrats don't just hate Christianity. They promote godlessness. Anything that attacks whites, men, Christians, patriots, or Americans has a higher value than the United States. Reality and truth have no place in their lives. Dems do all they can to make you a victim. That's their voting base. The voting base of the Democrat Party are victims. People who say, well, the white man held me down. He kept me from participating. He kept me from voting. He blah, 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 blah. Or, well, males have caused all these problems all over the place. Well, I don't care what your bitch is. The idea is it turns you into a victim. If you owe money to anyone, if you're a woman, a Mexican, a Muslim, a black, a sexual pervert, illegal drug user, a psychopath, too lazy to get a job, bred just for welfare, well, that makes you a victim also. And Islam is safe, and it should be promoted because it's not from the white man. There's basically what I've discovered. There are three types of Democrats. You have the elite. These are the ones who do or want to rule. They only want power, money, and sex. They do anything to keep their positions in all administrations. They will lie, cheat, steal, murder, bribe, threaten, blackmail, or worse. And these make up the majority of the deep state. They have infiltrated all, and I mean all, city, county, state, and federal agencies. The majority of the deep state are either 100% communistic Democrats or they are lying. We have people who, like a Duke Magin in California, he was a Democrat and he wanted some position in government. So there was no Republican running for attorney general. So he changed and said, well, I'm a Republican. And boom, now he's the attorney general and he claims he's a Republican. He's a liar. They're all liars. Now, then you have the minions, and these are the people that work for the elite because they're paid well or they get special benefit. These are professors, teachers, city council members, county commissioners, law enforcement, and military, whether they know it or not. See, these minions do the bidding of the elite. Then you have the useful idiots, and that's defined by Karl Marx. These are the ones who do the voting, the rioting, the screaming, the protesting, etc. These are the ones starting all the fires in the United States right now. They are hate-filled racists, anarchists. And when I say racist, I hope you don't think I'm saying they hate blacks. They don't. These people are insane. The white ones of these are racist because they hate whites. Thugs, criminals, arsonists, murderers, anything. They'll do anything. They're easily led by promised payments. And these promised payments aren't necessarily, here's $50. It's welfare, food stamps, student loans, government assistance, or they do get paid. And there's plenty of proof of that all over the internet. These are the majority of the social justice warriors you see on Facebook or Twitter. These are the idiots that get in arguments with anyone who doesn't agree. And that's the key there. They are not tolerant in any way, shape, or form. You cannot communicate to them. And I don't advise you to do so. If you come across any of these people at all, and they're yelling at you, Black Lives Matter, give us your homes, who do you think you are? You're not supposed to be having this stuff. You're not supposed to be doing anything. Well, you're not going to change their minds. My viewpoint is I will instantly go on the attack. And I'm not talking verbally. You might want to walk away, run away, get the hell out of the area. These idiots, these useful idiots, are typical cannon fodder. They don't care. They don't care how many of them get killed. They don't care how many of them get arrested. They truly believe that everyone is as stupid and successfully propagandized as they are. They no longer feel the need to hide their hate for America or for whites. And I'll end off with this part. The major premise for tactics is the development of operations that will maintain a constant pressure upon the opposition. Saul Alinsky from Rules for Radicals. These are the Democrats. And I could go more and more and more into that part, but I'm not going to. Instead, I'm going to continue with the liberal psychosis. I've got a couple clips here, and I'm going to tie them both together. They're going to explain more, give you a little more history on the Democrat Party. Now, they're not going to touch on the Illuminati aspect of it because all they're concerned about is the Democrat Party, not this group of people that are wanting to control the world. So hear those two clips.
Once I disclosed that I was Republican and the paper picked it up is when I started receiving hate mail from Democrats and people that told me that I was a sellout and that it was the tradition of black people to be Democrat. Up until that time, I didn't really think much about it.
The Republican Party has either not told a story well or a story has been hidden and contained by the liberal media. There would be no Voting Rights Act if it hadn't been for Republican Senate and House members. There would not be the legislation we have today. It was Republicans who stood up for that stuff. The Democrats were the racists back in those days. It was a Democratic South, and those Democratic governors were the racists. But again, you know, history has been kind of rewritten.
The Republican Party in Texas was started on the 4th of July, 1867, in Houston, Texas, by 150 blacks and 20 whites. It was that way across the South. Republican parties were started in the South by African Americans. In the state of Texas, two of our first three statewide Republican chairmen were African American. First 42 black legislators elected in Texas were all Republican. The first 112 black legislators elected in Mississippi were all Republican. The first 190 black legislators elected in South Carolina were all Republican. The first 41 in Georgia, the first 127 in Louisiana. So now you've got all these African Americans really stepping up and starting to gain political standing, political power. You have Democrats on the other side who have been very racist. It's in their platforms. They support the Dred Scott decision. They think the fugitive slave law is great. They started a nation to keep slavery alive. Very racist. And so now they're facing a situation where that these blacks are now their rulers, are now in office, are now U.S. senators, are now U.S. How do you stop that? 1866, Democrats themselves started the Ku Klux Klan. Its purpose was not to kill blacks. Its purpose was to take control and return Democrats to power. Their stated purpose in the KKK was to stop Republicans and restore Democratic control. If you're looking for a Republican that you want to take care of, you can wipe out any black you want because they're 100% Republicans at that point in time. You can't wipe out any white. I mean, some whites might be Democrats. You got to be a little more judicious when you're wiping out whites. So what happens is the Ku Klux Klan starts attacking, not blacks, Republican conventions. For example, in New Orleans, in the Republican convention in Louisiana. The Klan joined with the New Orleans police, joined with the New Orleans mayor, Democrats. They attacked physically at the convention in New Orleans, Republican convention. They killed 40 blacks, killed 20 whites. They wounded 150 others. 1868, they put out a push card in South Carolina, and it listed what they called the radical members of the South Carolina legislature. A push card's about the size of a baseball card. It was put up by the Klan. The Klan put it out. It had the pictures of 63 legislators that needed to be wiped out in South Carolina. 50 of those legislators were black, 13 were white. They were all 63 Republican. On the back of the card, it gave you the name of each legislator so you'd know who you're trying to kill. Congress starts these hearings in this group called the Klan, and they have hearings, and so they bring in Democrat leaders that under oath from these Democrat states said, yes, the Klan belongs to our party. It's actually in Congress. 1872, the hearings, it's a 13-volume set of hearings in Congress. Unequivocally, Democrats say the Klan is ours and belongs to us. It's there to restore Democrat control in the southern states. Those guys who lived through it made it very clear. For example, one of the early black congressmen was John Roy Lynch. Another early black congressman was Richard Kane. And they're having to fight the Klan physically for their own safety. They go armed to Congress because of the Klan attacks. These guys said, if we as blacks would simply stop voting the Republican ticket, if we would agree to vote the straight Democrat ticket, all the violence against us would be stopped.
In 1964, incidentally, a year that three of our civil rights workers were killed in Mississippi registering blacks to vote, was also the year that civil rights legislation, historic civil rights legislation, was being promoted, and President Johnson wanted to sign it, but nevertheless it was held up, bottled up in the United States Senate by Southern Democrats. One Democrat in particular who was the last individual to try to obstruct this legislation was a guy named Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, who for 14 hours and 13 minutes held a filibuster against this civil rights legislation.
Senator Robert Byrd used the nigger word three times on a national televised TV show. No outcry at all. Nobody said a thing, at least from the Democrat. No, the Black Caucus didn't say anything. The NAACP, no outcry.
There's no price to pay when you're on the left and you make intemperate racial remarks. There's no price to pay. We say, well, it's just we're making much to do about nothing.
They wanted to destroy Trent Lott. I mean, they went after him on BET, and this man had to eventually apologize. But nothing from Senator Robert Byrd.
Hypocrisy of liberals and media around how they reacted to Dodd's praise of Byrd on the Senate floor, and the reaction of Trent Lott praising an old man that was going to be dead within a year. Contrast that with the absolute silence of the liberal media around Bob Byrd being praised. I mean, a Klansman, a Klan leader, not just a member of the Klan, not just influenced by the Klan, but a operational leader of the Klan.
One of the things that has mystified me most over the last few years is to look at the civil rights establishment and have them regard the news of Colin Powell becoming America's first black Secretary of State, Condi Rice becoming America's second black national security advisor, and not hear some of them say, look, we have differences in opinion over their policies, we don't necessarily approve of everything they believe in, but this is a great step forward for Americans and black Americans in particular. What you hear instead is that, well, they're token, and maybe they're wannabe whites, and you know, these awful cartoons, political cartoons that were done after Condi Rice was named Secretary of State, where she was sitting on a porch barefoot, looking like some kind of a welfare queen or something like that, speaking in jive. Yet another one where she was a parrot sitting on George Bush's shoulder with big fat lips. I mean, just the most awful, hideous racial stereotypes, anti-black stereotypes, being hurled in the face of a very, very intelligent woman who was at Stanford University provost, speaks Russian, very accomplished woman. From
tendency to ascribe positive things to whiteness and negative things to blackness. So the kid who goes to the library, who plays the piano, the classics, who studies, is acting white.
What it says, basically, the people who argue that way, is that we black people don't have control over our own minds. We're not allowed to think what we wish. And we're essentially supposed to walk around in a racial plantation where everybody's liberal, everyone believes in the Democratic Party. And in that respect, we're not really men and women, but sort of like cattle. And so then they think, well, do I want to let my race down by acting white? Do I want to betray my people by acting white? And they say, well, I guess not. I guess I'll act black and come to school unprepared, not participate, not speak in proper English, talk jive. And what happens? You see a young black child's mind close up like that, and the kid's scores go down. And what have you done? You've ruined an American citizen for life.
When you think about racial equality and civil rights, which political party comes to mind? The Republicans or the Democrats? Most people would probably say the Democrats, but this answer is incorrect. Since its founding in 1829, the Democratic Party has fought against every major civil rights initiative and has a long history of discrimination. The Democratic Party defended slavery, started the Civil War, opposed Reconstruction, founded the Ku Klux Klan, imposed segregation, perpetrated lynchings, and fought against the Civil Rights Acts of the 1950s and 1960s. In contrast, the Republican Party was founded in 1854 as an anti-slavery party. Its mission was to stop the spread of slavery into the new Western territories with the aim of abolishing it entirely. This effort, however, was dealt a major blow by the Supreme Court in the 1857 case, Dred Scott versus Sandfoot. The court ruled that slaves aren't citizens, they're property. The seven justices who voted in favor of slavery, all Democrats. The two justices who dissented, both Republicans. The slavery question was, of course, ultimately resolved by a bloody civil war. The commander-in-chief during that war was the first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, the man who freed the slaves. 6 days after the Confederate Army surrendered, John Wilkes Booth, a Democrat, assassinated President Lincoln. Lincoln's vice president, a Democrat named Andrew Johnson, assumed the presidency. But Johnson adamantly opposed Lincoln's plan to integrate the newly freed slaves into the South's economic and social order. Johnson and the Democratic Party were unified in their opposition to the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, the 14th Amendment, which gave blacks citizenship, and the 15th Amendment, which gave blacks the vote. All three passed only because of universal Republican support. During the era of Reconstruction, federal troops stationed in the South helped secure rights for the newly freed slaves. Hundreds of black men were elected to Southern state legislatures as Republicans, and 22 black Republicans served in the U.S. Congress by 1900. The Democrats did not elect a black man to Congress until 1935. But after Reconstruction ended, when the federal troops went home, Democrats roared back into power in the South. They quickly reestablished white supremacy across the region with measures like black codes, laws that restricted the ability of blacks to own property and run businesses, and they imposed poll taxes and literacy tests used to subvert black citizens' right to vote. And how was all of this enforced? By terror, much of it instigated by the Ku Klux Klan, founded by a Democrat, Nathan Bedford Forrest. As historian Eric Foner, himself a Democrat, notes, in effect, the Klan was a military force serving the interests of the Democratic Party. President Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, shared many views with the Klan. He resegregated many federal agencies and even screened the first movie ever played at the White House, the racist film, The Birth of a Nation, originally entitled The Klansman. A few decades later, the only serious congressional opposition to the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964 came from Democrats. 80% of Republicans in Congress supported the bill, less than 70% of Democrats did. Democratic senators filibustered the bill for 75 days until Republicans mustered the few extra votes needed to break the logjam. And when all of their efforts to enslave blacks, keep them enslaved, and then keep them from voting had failed, the Democrats came up with a new strategy. If black people are going to vote, they might as well vote for Democrats. As President Lyndon Johnson was purported to have said about the Civil Rights Act, I'll have them is voting Democrat for 200 years. So now, the Democratic Party prospers on the votes of the very people it has spent much of its history oppressing. Democrats falsely claim that the Republican Party is the villain, when in reality, it's the failed policies of the Democratic Party that have kept blacks down. Massive government welfare has decimated the black family. Opposition to school choice has kept them trapped in failing schools. Politically correct policing has left black neighborhoods defenseless against violent crime. So when you think about racial equality and civil rights, which political party should come to mind? I'm Carol Swain, professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University for Prager University.
So another 12-year-old kid was doing the Zoom class, the virtual schooling, and the teacher happened to see a toy pistol. Now, you can't mistake it. It looks like a 1911, a Colt 45, except the whole slide, the whole top, was bright green, and Zombie Killer was printed across that. Well, that didn't stop the teacher from calling the police and having the police come and do a welfare check on the kid. The kid, which it was a mulatto, half black, half white. They were, the mother and the kid were totally in fear, in terror, for the child's life. They thought that the police would come in there and kill him because of all of the propaganda that's being pushed. Professor, you know, we need to shut down all universities in the United States. We need to shut down all school. All schools in the United States. Not only is every school in the United States taking funds from the U.S. government to teach our children, they're also communist cells that propagandize the children. This guy is a Rhode Island professor, and he basically said there's nothing wrong with murdering a Trump supporter from a moral perspective. Moral? Stanford University is offering sessions how to handle racial terror. And these are for whites, of course, because we're the only ones on earth that can be racist, right? So it's to teach us how to not be white, because we have to think outside of white supremacy, don't you know? Washington and Lee University offering courses on how to overthrow the state. And this is in Virginia. How to overthrow the state. What the hell is going to happen before all funding for this crap is shut down? You know, if we go into civil war, these people are screwed. Now, I was I went to visit my sister's husband one time on a military base. And I go up to the main gate, and the corporal there goes, where are you going, sir? And I told him where I'm going. He goes, well, you just drive straight ahead, and then you'll turn left. Turn left at the next street. And I looked at him. I said, I'm sorry, what is left? How is that spelled? L-E-F? And he said, it's left. I said, I don't understand what language you're talking. Are you telling me to turn left? L-E-F-T? And he said, oh, yes, sir. So what's happening in the United States right now is that because grammar is being butchered, that they're looking at giving up teaching standard English in favor of gutter speak. Well, they call that black language. I grew up, it was called gutter talk. This is where they don't speak English clearly. They want to ask you a question? No, they want to ax you. Ax you? This is going to happen. They're claiming that proper grammar, proper enunciation, and proper English is racist. So they're going to start teaching the black language or gutter talk. Every university in the United States has Communist Party cells in it, every single one. I have articles, everything I'm telling you, I got articles on it. Unions representing millions of workers are threatening to go on strike unless businesses start pushing the Black Lives Matter agenda. So you see, football started up again. You see that? Y'all happy about that? You happy about football starting up again? Well, the Big 12, these are the 12 biggest colleges, have decided that as social justice continues to be a topic of a conversation in the United States, the Big 12 has decided to take action starting this week. They'll launch a new anti-racism campaign, and the players might be on the field during the national anthem, meaning playing football if the national anthem plays. Of course, they might play the black national anthem, where all the racists will stand there and salute. They created two public service announcements that'll run during games, and a separate message for each individual school will be produced. Schools are also expected to wear a social justice message on the front of their uniforms, and a unity sticker will be issued. Well, the NFL started their football season also, and the first thing that happened was all the racists out there and the whining, self-righteous, virtue-signaling white players all got on the field and kissed BLM's butt and were instantly booed by the audiences. It's going to happen all over. Football, baseball, hockey, soccer, they're all going pure communist, and they're all going to be out of business. Where the hell are they getting the money to pay these players if they're not selling tickets? If you can believe this, there's actually people talking about on the internet, on news, in schools, about whether looting is justified. Is looting justified? Well, this guy goes to different colleges and he asks questions, and here's some of the answers he got.
I'm Cabot Phillips with Campus Reform. As rioting and protesting continues to happen around the country, we're here in Washington, D.C., asking college students whether they think looting is ever an acceptable form of protest. What will they have to say? Let's find out. Do you think that looting is ever something that can be justified in terms of a protest?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think definitely it could be justified, given that that's pretty much the only way we could get our message out there.
Whatever you need to do to be heard is the cost of it. I feel like it's inevitable that if change is going to come, there will be some violence that comes with that.
Honestly, I think it's justified. I mean, the people in power have stolen so much more. Anything that any of them loot will never match up to how much has been stolen from them.
I think it is sort of necessary because we haven't been getting the traction that that probably needs to happen.
You know, in the case of many white nationalist protests that have gotten violent, the conversation has never been about, like, their looting and the violence that they bring. I mean, it's easier to characterize people of color as violent than white people, I guess.
I definitely don't think that, like, looting is 100% like a black and white issue.
But people own those physical things, though,
I mean,
and they're being destroyed.
Could be replaced, though. Like, if it's a Target, Target is like a multi-million dollar company. At the end of the day, they can flip that and get it back.
Why is that fair?
I guess it's all just part of the healing process. I mean, like, some people get caught in the way, and that's unfortunate. But for meaningful progress to happen, unfortunate things happen.
It's very tough, and I, like, apologize to those business owners, but at the same time, I feel like it's kind of inevitable.
So what would be your message to the business owner that says, you can protest, but when you destroy my building, you're taking away my way of making money for my family?
I can understand the business owner's side as well. It is a tricky situation, but I'm leaning more towards being able to, you know, protest out there, kind of rioting every now and then.
If you in any way have been, like, responsible for, like, the gentrification that has happened in that community, or, like, the loss that has happened in that community, understand that there's a larger cause that people are fighting for versus, like, the cost that's going to take to repair your small business.
Peaceful protest has been attempted for so long, and obviously it really isn't working. Our institutions and the powers that be haven't really responded to this issue in a substantive manner. So, like, inevitably something is going to happen.
Yeah, like, something's going to happen. Like, you're going to get shot. This BLM is pure BS. And here's the funny part. You look at this. Look at this. You know, just take an exterior viewpoint and look at this. First off, and I've asked this question before, never mind the BLM, but how bad is a disease that you have to get a test to find out if you have it? And it's the same thing with this. How bad is it that Black Lives Matter, the rioting and looting is done by 98% white people? This whole BLM thing is phony. It's fraudulent. It's a smokescreen to cover up the attempted communist takeover of the United States. During the past year, past 6 months, actually, there were different very rich, very famous, very well-known black people interviewed. During these interviews, they were all asked, what do they think about BLM? This might surprise you. Now, I had to edit this down. Some of these guys they were talking to, let's just say I would spend more time beeping out what they were saying. Now, these guys, all of them, are talking like they normally talk. So you'll have to pardon if some of them sound a little more racist than others.
Now, I'm not no Black Lives Matter supporter. Like,
you're not?
No, absolutely.
Why not?
Because it's not our movement. This is a movement that was given to us by George Soros and his boys. Google George Soros and Black Lives Matter. See what comes up. Y'all out there, George Soros is a fucking multi-billionaire down with, you know, some of the 12 richest people in the world.
He raised $100 million.
Yep.
For Black Lives Matter Coalition. The funding comes in addition to more than $33 million in grants from top Democratic Party donor George Soros.
We're living in a time of great social engineering. Now, if y'all don't know what social engineering is, go look it up. Like, there's people out there that know how to scientifically make society do what they want it to do, how they want it to be done.
So I keep getting the same question. Gilly, you always giving up game. Why you don't get no game on Black Lives Matter? Because I don't get into that, nigga. All lives matter, nigga. I don't give a fuck if you white, black, blue, purple, brown, tangerine. Nigga, all lives matter. Y'all want a nigga to go out there head first, tell these motherfucking white people Black Lives Matter. But my motherfucking black life didn't matter to the nigga that tried to execute me, to the nigga that shot me in my motherfucking wrist, stomach, and my foot, the nigga that tried to have my mama singing It's So Hard to Say Goodbye. My black life didn't matter to that nigga. All the niggas I know been shot by niggas. And what about my motherfucking my nieces and nephews who half black and half white? Only 50% of their lives matter, nigga. And I understand the whole Black Lives Movement. We've been oppressed. We've been done wrong. Nigga, we do wrong to each other, nigga. We do more for each other than anybody.
It is in your hands to stop all the killing and all the shooting, wherever it might be. Because you cannot say Black Lives Matter and then kill yourselves.
I would take Black Lives Matter way more serious if they really believed that Black Lives Matter. I mean, in all these urban neighborhoods in the country, from east to west, north to south, there's ghettos, hoods, there's ghettos, there's killers that are illegal. They're criminals, and they terrorize neighborhoods, the same neighborhood they live in. I don't understand that. So black people are black people's biggest threat, not cops and not white people. So when black on black crime stops, when Black Lives Matter actually make me believe that they believe that black lives really matter, then I'll support it. It seems like it's a tool for an excuse for me to be able to do whatever I want in the world all of a sudden. Like, where was all these Black Lives Matter super militant people 10 years ago? How come all of a sudden when Trump is going up against Hillary, they want to push this race? Is it because they don't want people to vote for Donald Trump and they want them to stay in the Democratic welfare slave system?
The truth is that the left wants to strap black people to this idea that they are victims. They like black people to be government dependent. They don't like to see black people that are free thinkers and are independent.
But I'm not begging to be accepted or acknowledged. I don't want that. At minimum, I want you the hell out of my way. And if that was what the bulk of the conversation was about, maybe I'd be on board. But that's not what it is. It's, oh man, we're tired of this oppression, Mr. White Man. Please stop beating us, but also include us. What the fuck? No, that's what the movement is centered around. They don't want to admit that, but that's when you look at, just read the room. Look at what's going, look at the corporate entities and what they're saying, what they're going to do to combat it. It's all about help. We're going to help you. And this is why the movement is centered around two different people. That's part of that. Black folk, pity. I don't even want to call it self-loathing. That's not really what it is, but it's like this pitiful garbage, right? It's like, woe is me. I can't do nothing. I need help. Then you got the other side, white folk, self-loathing, guilty, wanting to position themselves as allies. So you got self-hating white folk and black folk that want some sort of pity for being black. That's the two large blocks of this movement. I don't support that.
No, no, no,
No. The question that I have in here, it says Black Lives Matter. When does Black Lives Matter? Because I'm confused. And what makes the Black lives so much more important than all other lives? Because that's what it seems like is happening. You making Black lives seem like it's way more important than anybody else's life. You seem like Black. Now it's almost people wear the fact that you, but they wear it with pride now. Not saying that being Black, you shouldn't be, like James Brown said, you Black and you proud. Not saying that you shouldn't be proud to be Black, but it shouldn't be a thing to where you are in a standpoint to where you feel like you are the only thing that matters.
But white privilege is not a real thing, because if it was, I could not have ever been successful because I'm Black. People like Ben Carson could not be successful because they're Black. And if anybody has an excuse for why they can't make it, it would be somebody like Ben Carson that literally started from the bottom, and he went from being in a low-income neighborhood to being a brain surgeon. Only in America does that happen. And only in America do we have the opportunities to rise to the top like none other. So before we blame other people and say, well, that's just your white privilege talking and you don't understand real struggle, remember this. America is about honoring God and country and working hard. That's the key to getting to the top. That's the key to success. The difference is a financial status, not a racial one. So next time when you think about, well, let's make a racist issue out of this, think twice about what it really is and look for a logical explanation outside of race, because everything doesn't need a race card pulled.
Okay, in one of my recent shows, I talked about the red shirts. You've heard the term brown shirts, and the red shirts in China. This is the Red Brigade. When Mao Zedong was taking over China and converting it fully into a communist nation, he had a group, and these were all the young. These were all the college students. They were to go out and they were to publicly shame. This is a communist ploy. It's textbook, literally, in the communist manifesto. It's a textbook thing. They shame people into acquiescing, into giving up, into deciding no longer to fight, no longer to resist. And at that point, when we all stop resisting, is when we become a communist nation.
One of the mob's weapons of psychological warfare is humiliation and ritual public shaming. And I'm not just talking about social media cancel culture. I'm talking about literal public shaming in public. Wouldn't it be chilling if the exact same tactics used by the Red Guards during the psychological terror campaign of China's Maoist Cultural Revolution were being used today? Yes, it would. And yes, they are. During the Cultural Revolution, dissidents and opponents of the revolution were publicly humiliated and shamed in the streets by baying mobs of Marxist-Leninist agitators. At the time, these displays were known as struggle sessions. The goal was to use verbal and physical abuse to force the accused into expressing both physical and ideological fealty and ultimately confessing their thought crimes. So what were the characteristics of Maoist struggle sessions? The mob would subject the target to repeated rhythmic chants as a form of re-education. Mob would force the target to kneel, which is another form of ritual public shaming.
They ordered us to get down on our knees.
So if they see that a white person is getting on their knees, that shows solidarity for the situation. And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
I am.
Kowtow!
Here it is, right here. There you go. Mr. White man, get these white women.
They forced my parents to kneel.
Target was made to wear blackboards describing their alleged crimes and sins. Target, who professed their innocence, maybe by refusing to conform to groupthink and mob intimidation, was regarded by the Maoists as the most guilty.
Confess your crimes.
Nothing to confess.
Can you believe
that Black trans lives matter?
That Black trans lives matter!
Mao keep taught us they have to receive the re-education.
He demands you!
He demands you!
I really wanted to beat him because I felt such hatred. The past was still too close.
The mob would be incited to target landowners who they were indoctrinated to believe were the architects of their oppression.
Those rounded up were made to write self-denunciations. They wore names on their backs. Capitalist. Landlord.
Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
Mao argued that the peasant violence was an inevitable response to landlord oppression. To redress past wrongs, it was necessary to go to extremes.
The mob would be incited to attack religious shrines.
Throughout the country, churches were closed, clergy unfrocked, religious symbols smashed.
Temples and shrines were ransacked. Despite official designation as cultural treasures,
the mob would be encouraged to erect their own murals and shrines to honor and ordain their ideological deities.
The statue of the Virgin Mary was replaced by a portrait of Mao. One form of worship gave way to another.
The goal of the mob was to rid the country of the old ideas by enacting reverse cultural imperialism.
There was to be a new revolution, a cultural revolution, a revolution in people's thinking.
All ideas contrary to Mao's thinking and the objects that represented them had to be destroyed.
Many irreplaceable objects were destroyed.
Not just by attacking the ideas, but by physically attacking the people, buildings and icons that represent those ideas and replacing them with their own.
Joan Lai's implicit distinction between smashing bourgeois ideas and smashing bourgeois individuals was quickly forgotten.
Both young Red Guard fighters go out on the streets. That is, the old ideas, old culture, old customs and old habits left over by the old society which spread feudal poison and symbolized imperialist aggression and capitalist exploitation.
The mob would be incited to attack shops and businesses perceived not to be fully supporting their cause.
They're destroying old shop signs and replacing them with revolutionary ones.
There was a famous hair salon. It displayed photographs of all kinds of hairdos. When the Cultural Revolution came, they were seen as examples of bourgeois decadence. A group of Red Guards took over the place.
The mob would be incited to target street signs and lobby for street names to be changed. In doing so, re-educating their class enemies to be ashamed of their heritage.
There have been many campaigns across the country, from renaming Liverpool's Penny Lane.
We've got to recognise that our public realm, statues, squares, street names, don't accurately reflect our values or London in 2020.
They are putting up quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong. The Chinese people will go all out to establish the new ideas, new culture, new customs and new habits of the proletariat.
The mob would be incited to believe that looting and stealing is merely the just reappropriation of wealth.
We knew our home would be a target sooner or later. We fit the category. My parents had both been capitalists. Finally, one day, the Red Guards came charging in and turned our house upside down.
This is a business that my parents started 40 years ago, small, out of their garage. You didn't do anything to anybody. You know, why did we deserve it?
Former capitalists who had long since given up their assets. The local police asked the Minister of Public Security if the Red Guards should be stopped. No, that would be unwise.
Now, I'm not saying that the activities of BLM have reached anywhere near the level of terror dished out by the Red Guard. But I'm starting to notice some similarities. Victims of the Maoist Cultural Revolution were not just publicly shamed for their beliefs. They were executed for them. Of course, that would never happen in America, would it?
One person wearing a Patriot prayer hat was shot and killed in Portland last night.
You're the Nazi! Our community held its own! Took out the trash!
Dissidents and thought criminals who refused to cave to the mob were also taken to re-education gulags. Of course, that would never happen in America, would it?
They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. They felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest, where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill. 25 million people.
In 1984, George Orwell described the 2 minutes of hate, which was akin to public shaming training for the citizens of Airstrip 1. The rage that one felt was an abstract, undirected emotion, a shaming ritual which could be switched from one object to another like the flame of a blow lamp. Just as BLM agitators are able to switch their rage on a whim, from targeting a senator to a diner to an old woman, all seen as being born with original sin because of their skin colour. The object of ire could be anyone, writes James Panero. What matters is the display of denunciation and the pitiless scorn that must be arbitrarily shown. The impact of public shaming is also reflected in political polls. In the case of both Brexit and Donald Trump, the polls got it spectacularly wrong. Part of the reason for that was because voters were reluctant to tell pollsters their actual voting preference. Whatever the strength of their private beliefs, public shaming had made people ashamed of expressing support for Brexit or Trump. Expect that phenomenon to be repeated in 2020. Ritual public humiliation struggle sessions were happening in China right up until 1978, when reformist Deng Xiaoping abolished them. In Maoist China, without explicitly calling for political violence, the political class was nonetheless able to legitimize and incite it.
Even though the editorial neither mentioned the report nor praised violence, it was clear that the extreme actions of the Red Guards were not to be criticized.
In the United States, the political class has achieved the exact same thing. No explicit call for violence, but the subtle legitimization and incitement of the mob to carry out Maoist-style psychological warfare against the American people.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Go ahead, take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
The last bit I just put in myself, that came from an ad that I had done in California when we had our gun shop there. On my ad, I was talking about how people are easily led, especially the willing. And that's basically what it is they're sheep. And that's where the term sheeple came from. Maybe you didn't know that, but I'm the guy that coined the phrase sheeple. And that was in the 80s. And I knew Michael Savage. And I had talked to him many times because I was on the same radio, KGO, that he was. And I mentioned sheeple, the word sheeple. And he asked me, he said, can I use it? I said, Mike, you can have it. All right, so I told you a couple shows ago about Disney's going to be releasing the Mulan movie. And it's to people who are already subscribers to the Disney Channel, except they're going to have to pay $30. $30 a household to watch the movie. Okay? Well, that raised up a whole bunch of eyebrows, shall we say. And it also started people looking closer at what Disney was doing. This movie, Mulan, was filmed in the same region in China, in communist China, where communist Chinese have FEMA camps. You want to call them FEMA? No, re-education camps for the Muslims. Millions of people are in these prison camps in the same county where they filmed Mulan. So Disney's quite happy and eager to work with our enemies, which shows them that Disney is their friend, which means the friend of our enemy is our enemy. All right, now we're going to get into the government threat. And there's not that much in it right now. It could be. But instead, I'm going to just a few things here. Speaking of FEMA camps, the governor of Ohio, along with his emergency management team, has decided that they're going to create FEMA shelters, and they're going to legalize them for people to be stuck into. These are going to be shelters for people who need to quarantine for any reason and who don't want to do it on their own. So the government in Ohio is going to arrest them and haul them off to these camps and shove them in there. And this is America. Do you know that we would have been at war with this deep state after the first year of all of this crap? And I'm not talking about this Wuhan virus. I'm talking about all of the deep state crap going back 50 years or longer. We would already be at war if the revolution, if George Washington was still alive and the rest of the founding fathers. They wouldn't have put up with this crap for a minute. They would look at us like, are you crazy? Are you crazy? You're allowing them to do that? Well, Ohio is not the only place. I know personally dozens of places. Years ago, I was one of the informational officers of the U.S. militias. There was a couple dozen of us spread throughout the United States. And what we would do, we would gather data on conspiracy theories, conspiracy theory, the whole term was created in the 60s by the CIA to invalidate everything that the Patriots would discover. So we were to investigate these things and find proof of them. And these camps, my brother, my wife, and I personally found five of them and photographed them in various parts of California and Nevada. Picture a prison camp. I mean, over military base, right? It's got 8-foot concertina wire all the way around it. Cyclone fence, concertina wire. What is it? Maybe 5 acres, maybe 4 acres, 2 acres, or something like that. And you have some barracks in there, and you have some operational buildings. You know, okay. Well, they would take those, and they would put 5 machine gun towers, one on each corner, one in the middle. They would put bars on all the windows. They would beef up the cyclone fences, make them stronger and almost impossible to climb, and then they would close and lock them for whenever they're going to need them. I had photographs of 5 of these places in various unknown areas. I got a phone call one night at midnight. Now, this is before cell phones. This is before the internet really took off. And it was one of my counterparts in the state of Oregon. He said, we need to meet. I've got something for you. So I met him at a bar. He gave me a 8x12 manila envelope. I gave him an 8x12 manila envelope with basically locations of all these places and photographs. He had a dozen of them in his file to give me. So we know that they exist. These places exist throughout the United States. And it's not a big deal. They do them all the time. They close down a military base. They close down a National Guard base. They close down a training area. And then they send contractors in with no license plates to build them up in a certain manner and then lock them and leave. They're all over the place. This Ohio, because it's run by a communist, if you're a Democrat, you're a communist. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that's it. That's all there is. So they figure they can get away with it. Now let's see what the people in Ohio do. There's a gentleman named Mike Wallace. Used to interview the most astounding people that you'll ever hear. And I've played some of his interviews. We're talking in the 50s and 60s. I come across this interview. It was done in 1958. A guy named Aldous Huxley. In 1932, he wrote The Brave New World, which pretty much talks about where we're headed. And I edited part of it out so that you can hear it. And I think this is, you re-listen to this. You listen to these words that this man is going to say. Everything, in fact, everything that I ever say is data that if you take everything that I've ever said and put it all together, you'll have the future. But you listen to this guy And he just raised the hairs in the back of my neck.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels and social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. And Mr. Huxley, right off the bat, let me ask you this. As you see it, who and what are the enemies of freedom here in the United States?
Well, I don't think you can say who in the United States. I don't think there are any sinister persons deliberately trying to rob people of their freedom. But I do think, first of all, that there are a number of impersonal forces which are pushing in the direction of less and less freedom. And I also think that there are a number of technological devices which anybody who wishes to use can use to accelerate this process of going away from freedom, of imposing control.
Well, what are these forces and these devices, Mr. Huxley?
There are two main impersonal forces. The first of them is not exceedingly important in the United States at the present time, though very important in other countries. This is the force which in general terms can be called overpopulation, the mounting pressure of population pressing upon existing resources. This, of course, is an extraordinary thing. Something is happening which has never happened in the world's history before. I mean, let's just take a simple fact that between the time of the birth of Christ and the landing of the Mayflower, the population of the earth doubled. It rose from 250 million to probably 500 million. Today, the population of the earth is rising at such a rate that it will double in half a century.
Well, why should overpopulation work to diminish our freedoms?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, the experts in the field, like Harrison Brown, for example, pointed out that in the underdeveloped countries, actually the standard of living is at present falling, that people have less to eat and less goods per capita than they had 50 years ago. And as the position of these countries, the economic position, becomes more and more precarious, obviously the central government has to take over more and more responsibility for keeping the ship of state on an even keel. And then, of course, you're likely to get social unrest under such conditions, with again an intervention of the central government. So I think one sees here a pattern which seems to be pushing very strongly towards a totalitarian regime. And unfortunately, as in all these underdeveloped countries, the only highly organized political party is the Communist Party, it looks rather as though they will be the heirs to this unfortunate process, that they will step into the position of power.
Well, then, ironically enough, one of the greatest forces against communism in the world, the Catholic Church, according to your thesis, would seem to be pushing us directly into the hands of the communists because they are against birth control.
Well, I think this strange paradox probably is true. An extraordinary situation, actually. I mean, one has to look at it, of course, from a biological point of view. The whole essence of biological life on Earth is a question of balance, and what we have done is to practice death control in a most intensive manner without balancing this with the birth control at the other end. Consequently, the birth rates remain as high as they were, and death rates have fallen substantially.
All right, then. So much for the time being, anyway, for overpopulation. Another force that is diminishing our freedoms.
Well, another force which I think is very strongly operative in this country is the force of what may be called over-organization. As technology becomes more and more complicated, it becomes necessary to have more and more elaborate organizations, more hierarchical organizations. And incidentally, the advance of technology has been accompanied by an advance in the science of organization. It's now possible to make organizations on a larger scale than was ever possible before. And so that you have more and more people living their lives out as subordinates in these hierarchical systems controlled by bureaucracies, either bureaucracies of big business or the bureaucracies of big government.
Mm-hmm. Now, the devices that you were talking about, are there specific devices or methods of communication which diminish our freedoms in addition to overpopulation and overorganization?
Well, there are certainly devices which can be used in this way. I mean, let us take, after all, a piece of very recent and very painful history is the propaganda used by Hitler, which was incredibly effective. I mean, what were Hitler's methods? Hitler used terror on the one kind, brute force on the one hand, but he also used a very efficient form of propaganda, which he was using every modern device at that time. He didn't have TV, but he had the radio, which he used to the fullest extent, mm-hmm. and was able to impose his will on an immense mass of people. I mean, the Germans were a highly educated people.
Well, we're aware of all this, but how do you equate Hitler's use of propaganda with the way that propaganda, if you will, is used, let us say, here in the United States? Are you suggesting that there is a parallel?
Needless to say, it's not being used in this way now. The point is, it seems to me, that there are methods at present available, methods superior in some respects to Hitler's method, which could be used in a bad situation. I mean, what I feel very strongly is that we mustn't be caught by surprise by our own advancing technology. This has happened again and again in history. Technology has advanced, and this changes social conditions, and suddenly people have found themselves in a situation which they didn't foresee and doing all sorts of things they didn't really want to do.
Well, now, what do you mean? Do you mean that we develop our television, but we don't know how to use it correctly? Is that the point that you're making?
Well, at present, the television, I think, is being used quite harmlessly. It's being used, I think, I would feel it's being used too much to distract everybody all the time. But, I mean, imagine, which must be the situation in all communist countries, where the television, where it exists, is always saying the same thing the whole time, is always driving along. It's not creating a wide front of distraction. It's creating a one-pointed drumming in of a single idea all the time. It's obviously an immensely powerful instrument.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the potential misuse of the instrument.
Exactly. We have, after all technology is in itself morally neutral. These are just powers which can either be used well or ill. It's the same thing with atomic energy. We can either use it to blow ourselves up, or we can use it as a substitute for the coal and the oil.
Now remember, this interview was 1958. So Huxley understood the whole concept of communism. It was said that he was possibly a socialist, but I have no idea. I know I've read everything he's ever written. All right, now we're going to get into the category of Trump. And it's getting weirder and weirder when I go into this category. You know, in the past 2 weeks, the Atlantic came out, the magazine came out and said, Trump is anti-military, and he hates the military, and he's called military stupid and suckers and all of this crap. And I'm like, what? So this came out. This is big. This is another. And you guys should know better. You should know this stuff. I've actually had somebody come in here and say, yeah, I used to like Trump, but now from all I've heard about blah 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 blah, I don't know. And I'm like, are you kidding me? In one breath, you tell me how you don't trust the mainstream media, and then you tell me how you believe the mainstream media? Don't be stupid. Don't fall for this crap. It's way too coincidental that within hours after the article was posted from the Atlantic, all of a sudden there are anti-Trump ad pops up about how Trump thinks that all military are suckers. It's just hours that it popped up. We have, again, we're at war. Trump is the example of taking down the deep state. Trump is the example. Even though he's a billionaire, he represents me. I got no doubts whatsoever that he would, if he came to visit me and we had to pull potatoes, he'd roll his sleeves up and said, well, I got 10 minutes, let's go do some work. I got no doubts about that. But the Democrats, forget it. That ain't going to happen. Especially with Biden. I don't think he remembers where he is one step to the next. We have enemies all throughout the United States, never mind the rest of the world and the communists that and the UN that's attacking us. I don't understand. Why are we allowing enemies within our gates? I don't understand. National Public Radio, NPR, compares Donald Trump to Mussolini and the Ku Klux Klan, which is stupid because the Ku Klux Klan, as we all know, was formed and created by the Democrats. NPR exists because the government gives them millions of dollars a year. What the hell is wrong with us? I don't get it. It's the same thing. We're funding schools. We're funding colleges and universities. And they are anti-American. But they exist because they get our funding. Soros and Bill Gates, they have this organization called Integrity Group. And this is an organization. It's called, they call themselves actually the Transition Integrity Project, TIP. Now, the purpose of this is in case Trump loses the election and refuses to leave the White House. This is another problem that is being created by the Democrats and the communists in the United States. And then, of course, they're going to come up with a solution. Problem, solution. There is no problem. Trump, if he loses the election and everything's said and done, he'll say, hey, nice knowing you guys. I'm going back to work and make money now. So this organization is, it's all funded. Soros, Bill Gates, all of the Democrats put money into this organization. This is just astounding me. The communists in America are literally preparing for violence. If he wins the election, they're going to somehow attack the White House and drag him out? I don't know. I got no clue what's going on. You know, Trump has said that this mail-in voting thing is going to be so much fraud, it's ridiculous. I stopped collecting articles on mail-in voting fraud that is occurring and has occurred in the past couple years. And now they're finding mail that's being dumped in parking lots all through California. I have one article that I'll send you to, and it's from KTLA, Glendale, California. They found bags of mail dumped in a parking lot. And this is not fraud? I mean, come on. What the hell's going on here? Well, you probably haven't heard of this because the mainstream media does not report anything that Trump does that actually benefits the United States. You know, on college campuses, you can't. There's no First Amendment rights there. You don't have the right to speak. You do if you're a communist, but if you're a Republican or a conservative, you don't have the right to talk. Well, there was a rule issued by the Education Department on last Wednesday, and basically what it says is if a college or university does not allow First Amendment rights for all people there, they will no longer receive funding. That's just the crux of it. We'll see what happens from there. Also, the public schools in the United States are starting to teach. This is revisionist history. It's called the 1619 Project. Now, what is the 1619 Project? The 1619 Project is another communist, racist, alternative version of history where they claim if the black man wasn't here in 1619, or if we didn't bring him here, or if we didn't have them as slaves in 1619, there would be no America because the black man built America. The whites had nothing to do with it. That's what they're teaching in schools in the United States. Those of you who allow your children, as of last year, actually 10 years ago, to be in public school, I consider you a traitor. I consider you a traitor to your children and to the United States and to your society. And I don't care if you're black or white. There's no excuse. My wife and I sacrificed everything to raise my child and to teach him from home. So Trump has threatened, told them all, if you teach this revisionist history, we're going to cease your funding. This is it. They have no moral compass, these communists, but they know that they don't want their wallet emptied out. Trump also came out. He found out about this. He didn't know about it. He found out that agencies, or the deep state, within the federal government were teaching racism. What they were teaching is that whites are born racists, and they need to learn how not to be racist so that they can exist with the actual rulers of the world, the black race. So they're teaching them, all of these different agencies, even the FBI, are being ordered to attend what they call critical race theory classes. Trump found out about it, did some research, and signed an executive order to cancel them all immediately, instantly. And he also came out and said that if you find anybody, any agency, any superior that are trying to make whites as a lower class or even blacks as a lower class, if you find anyone in your group, in your corporation, in your department that are teaching racism of any kind, contact the Department of Justice and we'll handle it instantly. Tucker had something to say about this.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. For our news media, it was a tough slog. One of their favorite programs has been discontinued. On Friday, the president issued an executive order forcing federal agencies to halt mandatory indoctrination on something called critical race theory. What exactly is critical race theory? Well, if you work in the government or in corporate America, you probably already know what it is. It's when your employer hires a lavishly paid consultant to tell half the room they're damned to hell because of the way they were born. In a word, critical race theory is racism. More broadly, it is the latest attempt by the most privileged people in our society, the celebrities, politicians, college professors, talk show hosts, to disclaim the blame for their mismanagement of our country onto the people below them. Hey, working class guy driving the truck. Hey, beat cop making 50 grand a year to risk your life. It's your fault. You did it. You're the real enemy here, and there's nothing you can do to change that. Systemic racism. Sorry. For our incompetent elites trying to cover their tracks, you can see the appeal of this. And by the way, it pays well. Not many diversity trainers are going hungry tonight. Unfortunately, critical race theory is a lie from the first word to the last, from start to finish. It is vicious. It is cruel. It divides the country potentially for good. It makes Americans hate each other. It's a tragedy in that way. It is also, and you cannot say this enough because it is true, it is also the very definition of the racism they are claiming to fight. And yet it is everywhere. Critical race theory is what apparently informed Kamala Harris just today when she said that she was, quote, proud of Jacob Blake. Blake is a man credibly accused of sexual assault. How could Harris say that? Because she doesn't care what Jacob Blake did or didn't do. She only cares what color he is. According to critical race theory, that's all that matters. This stuff is so obviously poison, fatal to any society that ingests it. It came from the universities, of course, like all bad ideas, but it spread quickly to the corporate world, which has found critical race propaganda enormously useful to the bottom line. Pay no attention to our sweatshops in Asia. There's a BLM logo on our website. But it didn't stop there. Last week, we interviewed a journalist called Chris Rufo, who's been investigating the spread of critical race theory in the federal government. He's been doing this virtually alone. The rest of the press corps has ignored it. Rufo told us that even the FBI is now holding weekly Maoist critical race struggle sessions.
Critical race theory has actually now infiltrated our criminal justice system. Just this week, I released a story that the FBI is now holding weekly seminars on intersectionality, which is a hard left academic theory that reduces people to a network of racial, gender, and sexual orientation identities that intersect in complex ways and determine whether you are an oppressor or oppressed.
So that interview, along with a lot of Chris Rufo's other highly detailed reporting from the past several months, apparently got the attention of the president, and he acted. It also prompted a flood of tips for Rufo from workers at federal agencies, the ones currently being told they're evil for the way they look. Most had kept silent about what they were going through. They felt they had no choice but to endure it. But they do have a choice. This is wrong, and we should say so loudly. Americans are starting to realize that. Now, the White House, as we said, has responded to their pleas. To the news media, all of this was a disaster. They claimed to be journalists, but they despise actual reporting like Chris Rufo's. His coverage showed that they are complicit in an anti-American lie that is deeply unpopular with actual Americans. And they didn't take it well.
What these trainings are designed to do is for each person themselves to be able to recognize that unconscious bias and to be able to pinpoint it before it becomes a problem.
This is at a time when the country is going through a national reckoning on race relations. So is this tone deaf?
It's insane is what it is. I feel like I'm in a twilight zone.
There is some clear evidence that some racial sensitivity or racial bias training might be needed and beneficial in the federal government.
This follows a pattern by the president of disregarding attempts to reckon with this fraught racial history that is undeniably the case in this country.
It never ceases to amaze me how many people hear the phrase white privilege like it's a curse word. I'm here to reassure you, America, it is not one.
White privilege is very real, they're telling you. It is time for a, quote, reckoning on race relations. You hear that all the time. But at some point, you've got to wonder why any of these people, the most privileged people in America, still have their jobs. If they meant what they were saying, why haven't they resigned and given their highly paid gigs to oppressed people? That's a very good question. It's the core question. And someone ought to ask Jeff Zucker about that sometime. Zucker is the head of CNN. He's a graduate of Harvard University. He's been in television his entire adult life. Jeff Zucker is the embodiment of privilege, if there ever was one. According to critical race theory, the theory that he espouses and defends, Jeff Zucker got his job precisely because of systemic racism. So why does he still have it? How can he bear to hold that job? Needless to say, Jeff Zucker has no plans to resign. Instead, according to sources, he ordered his minions to attack this show for the crime of criticizing critical race theory. And over the weekend, the most dutiful ones did just that.
Tucker's show gets results. No more talk about white privilege. No more examination of systemic racism. The Trump administration doesn't want it inside federal agencies, even though 2020 is being defined in part by this long overdue reckoning about race.
Well, this morning, we are told, Jeff Zucker instructed the entire CNN news operation to keep up the attacks on this show, which is fine. We can't control it. Good luck with that. Go crazy. But as long as Jeff Zucker still holds on to his own job, which according to their own talking points is the ill-gotten fruit of white privilege and systemic racism, we will know for certain they do not mean a single word of what they are saying, because of course they don't mean it. They never did. Meanwhile, we are learning how deeply this poison has penetrated into the federal agencies. Whiteness is terrorism. That's what they're telling the people whose job it is to defend our country, the U.S. military. This show has obtained video of a U.S. Air Force staff psychologist, a man called Dr. Ryan Warner, leading an online seminar called Unmasking Microaggressions in the Workplace that happened on June 5th. In the video lecture, which was also delivered to the USDA and the Forest Service, Warner links so-called microaggressions to the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis.
These innocent, subtle things, they may not seem like a big deal to some, but as we see in today's society, similar to what happened to George Floyd, those microaggressions, those unconscious bias can ultimately lead to more significant and severe impacts.
So if you hadn't offended your coworker by asking her where she's from, a microaggression, then George Floyd might still be alive. That's lunacy. It's also incredibly stupid. But it's the official message of a staff psychologist at a U.S. Air Force base. It's not just Dr. Warner. He's a symptom of a much larger problem. Remember that this summer it emerged that the U.S. Army's so-called Operation Inclusion told soldiers in Alabama that the phrase "Make America Great Again" is a form of, quote, socially acceptable covert white supremacy. That's the campaign slogan of the commander-in-chief. Now, according to the Army's, quote, equity and inclusion agency, the phrases "all lives matter," "American exceptionalism," and, quote, "the celebration of Columbus Day" are also examples of white supremacy. They're racist, too. In May of 2017, the U.S. Coast Guard spent $8,600 on diversity training led by white fragility author and noted lunatic Robin DiAngelo. The Defense Intelligence Agency, meanwhile, a supposedly serious place staffed by serious people, also endorsed DiAngelo's crackpot race theories. The head of the DIA, Lieutenant General Robert Ashley, said in a recent town hall and in his weekly email to employees that white fragility was recommended reading. Meanwhile, over at NASA, employees are being directed to resources concerning white fragility, an Atlantic piece, the Atlantic magazine, called Microaggressions Matter, and a guide on how to be a good, quote, white ally. Remember, this is an agency that you pay for that is designed to launch rockets and study space. In August of 2018, the Department of the Navy gave a group called White Men as Full Diversity Partners almost $10,000, a contract for training services. That was the same group that hosted a 3-day diversity re-education testing camp last year at Sandia National Laboratories. That's the outfit that designs our nuclear weapons to defend the country existentially. In the opening session for white men, and only white men, at Sandia Labs, the trainers demanded that the men make a list of associations about white male culture. The trainers wrote that some of the associations included, quote, white supremacists, KKK, Aryan Nation, MAGA hat, privileged, and mass killings. Is anyone actually okay with this? Does anyone want to be subjected to this? Want your sons subjected to this? They didn't do anything wrong. They were just born a certain way. This is evil. And it's also the most corrosive thing we can do. It's hard to imagine even MSNBC contributors really want, I don't know, nuclear submarines in our Navy, wasting time hating themselves when they should be defending our nation. So what is this really about? Why are they doing this? Well, of course, it's about capturing the U.S. military for the political left. That's what it's about, nothing else. And it's working. At the Pentagon, a shockingly high number of flag officers seem sympathetic to radical left-wing social theories. Shockingly high. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper clearly is as well. Even among uniformed troops, new polls show that the president's support is now underwater. So the point is, their plans have paid off. The question is, why is the left so intent on controlling the minds of our military? Well, there could be many reasons for that. None of them are good.
Before we leave this category, I want to read something. Came from a guy named Ole Remus. And he was on the internet for many years, and he died a year or so ago. He had something to say about middle class. Middle class America is no less violent than any other people. They seem passive because they're results oriented. They rise not out of blood frenzy, but to solve the otherwise insoluble. Their methods of choice are goodwill, cooperation, forbearance, negotiation, and finally appeasement, roughly in that order. Only when these fail to end the abuse do they revert to blowback, and they do so irretrievably. Once the course is set and the outcome defined, doubt is put aside. The middle class is known, condemned actually, for carrying out violence with the efficiency of an industrial project where bloody destruction at any scale is not only in play, it's a metric. Remorse is left for the next generation. They'll have the leisure for it. We like to believe this is merely dark speculation. History says it isn't. You need to be afraid of us. I'm talking to every communist, every Democrat, every progressive, every liberal, everyone out there who thinks that they're in the right by condemning white people, by crushing the government, by causing fear and chaos. You have a right to be afraid. Where do you think the warriors went from all the past wars? Do you think we died? Do you think we disappeared? You better stop poking the dragon. All right. Now we're going to get into a section that I think you guys are going to like a little bit, because it's kind of necessary. This is non-lethal self-defense I'm going to talk about. Anyone can carry a gun. And the problem is not many people nowadays are willing to pull the trigger. And if you've got some guys want to hassle you, want to kick your butt, want to rob you, steal from you, damage your vehicle, damage your home, interrupt your dinner, I don't care what, you don't need to pick up a gun and shoot them. There's all kinds of other things you can do. So I'm going to cover some of these things. Now, it sounds funny for me to say this, but I'm an expert in this because I'm a state-certified witness in the state of California on stun guns and pepper spray. That's just two of them. They're chemical irritants. You know, you can buy pepper spray. You can buy them anywhere. As a matter of fact, Survival Enterprises right now is selling it. We are selling pepper spray, and I don't sell normal pepper spray. I don't sell Walmart specials. I don't sell the Costco special. I sell stuff that's potent. It's actually, you want to see what the stuff is I sell? Look at any of these videos where the police are spraying people with pepper spray. That's what I sell. I don't have it on a website yet. I'm probably not going to put it on a website. You can always call us. Now, this is a plug, right, real quick. You can always call Survival Enterprises at 800-753-1981. 800-753-1981. You can give us a holler, and I'll tell you what we have and how much it is. And it's not expensive at all. It starts at $7 and it goes up to $50. It just depends on what kind of pepper spray you want. And then we have stun guns. These are small little, they're about the size of a pack of cigarettes, maybe a little bit bigger. And they're rechargeable. They got their own plug on it. You fold it down, plug it in the wall, recharge it. It'll knock someone flat on their butt. And I'll talk about that later. Anyway, you have chemical irritants is what these are called. And that would be mace, pepper spray, even wasp spray. You know, you spray wasps with. That can be used to deter somebody. Of course, you're not going to carry a one-pound can of wasp spray around with you. So you get yourself some pepper spray. They come in like little half-ounce, three-quarter-ounce stuff. Pepper spray is a chemical irritant. Now, the main ingredient is oleoresin capsicum. It comes from peppers. Some are real, real hot. Some are just hot. And the idea is you spray this on a mucous membrane. It affects mucous membranes. This is the eyes. This is the mouth, the lips, the nose. This is behind the ears. This is under the arms. This is the chest, the small of the back, the low of the back, the crack of the butt, the groin, behind the knees. This is where chemical irritants do their job. Now, pepper spray and mace. Mace is another chemical. It's CS. There's CN and CS gas. There's mixtures of all of these. And basically the idea is you spray it in the face of your attacker. And it doesn't matter if that attacker is a dog, a human, or a bear. You spray it in the face and then you either run like hell or kick crap out of him. That's up to you. Years ago when I started on this research on pepper, I was contacted by a friend of mine in Florida. He had a plantation in Haiti, and he was harvesting these special peppers there that he was turning into a pepper spray, and he wanted to know if I wanted to become part of it. You had to wear a hazmat suit to harvest these peppers. That's how bad they were. And the pepper spray was named Knockout. To give you an example, a couple years after we started selling Knockout pepper spray, the FBI contacted me and said, look, we want to start carrying pepper spray, but we need to have tests. Feasibility tests on all these different brands that are out there. So I didn't want to enter into the test because you have to fill out all these forms and you have to conform to government this and government that, and I didn't want to get into the crap. But I went to the test, and the idea was this. You had a guy that was standing outside of a car. He would get a two-second spray in the face. Then he would get in a car and drive through an S pattern and park the car against a brick wall. Depending on how well he performed, if he performed well, the pepper spray wasn't that good. So I'm watching these six or seven different companies, and they all have their own pepper spray. And these guys, these volunteers, get hosed, and they get in the car, and they almost every single one of them was able to park the car. A couple times they bumped the brick wall. But my buddy, the FBI agent, goes, why don't you throw yours into the test here? And I said, I don't want to enter into it. He goes, well, just for the hell of it, give me your pen. I had a little pen spray. And I pulled it out of my pocket and said, here. So he gets the next volunteer. Guy stands beside the car. My buddy walks up to him and he gives him a two-second spray. The guy falls to his knees, pukes his brains out, and all but life support breathing is shut down. That's what real pepper spray does. And that's the stuff that I got here now. Well, they stopped selling the Knockout. It was too gruesome. It was too nasty. Anyway, so pepper spray is something you can carry, and it's legal in most states. It is legal in California. I know it is because I made it legal. Assemblywoman Jackie Speier, whom I have no love for whatsoever because she's a communist, but what she contacted me because people were using firearms to defend themselves against rapists. Like women were, right? And she thought that was awful, that people would actually use a gun to kill that poor rapist. So we come up with this idea, look, why don't we just legalize pepper spray in the state of California? Pepper spray and stun guns were both in the deadly weapons class in the state of California. So I wrote a bill, very simple paragraph, very standard. You know, anybody can carry and use one of these over the age of 18 as long as they don't have a felony on a record, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so it's just a paragraph. So she takes it and we go to, it goes through the bill mill and it ends up on the floor of the Senate where I have to debate the assistant attorney general. And the idea was he was saying he does not want, and this is a quote, "We do not want another weapon in the hands of the criminals." And I stood up and I said, "Excuse me, sir, this is strictly forbidden for criminals to purchase and use." And he said, "Oh, you don't understand. We consider all citizens criminals. We just haven't caught you yet." And at that point, the one Republican on the panel, because it was all Democrats, he stood up and said, "Mr. Wilson, let's go have a cup of coffee real quick." I was about to blow up at this commie elitist. And we go out into the hallway and he said, "Look, he's just trying to egg you on. Just ignore him. Just say, thank you, sir, and sit down. This is a given. Whatever Jackie Speer wants, Jackie Speer gets. It's going to pass. Don't let him BS you." So it got passed. 6 months later, Jackie calls me up and she's in tears. She said, "Two of my friends were raped and they didn't have anything with them because they couldn't get pepper spray." And I go, "What do you mean they couldn't get pepper spray?" "Yeah, I wrote a bill. Didn't you pass a bill?" "Oh, it was amended." "It was what?" "Yes, it was 3 pages. Apparently you had to go take a test, get a license, and then you could only buy from licensed dealers. And you could only buy licensed products. All of that, nobody's going to do. And I told her that. I said, "Are you crazy? This is stupid." So they reverted it back to the original bill. And then from that point on, everybody was buying pepper spray in the state of California. You can carry it on. You do not want to carry it on a plane. Don't even think about it. If you're going to fly and you have pepper spray, you could put it in a baggie and put it in your checked luggage and hope it gets through. Generally, airlines do not like any kind of pressurized chemical, be it shave foam or pepper spray. They'll just confiscate it. So my suggestion is don't fly with pepper spray. Buy some wherever you go. It's only going to cost you $10-$20. Okay. Now, pepper spray is not going to kill anyone. Sometimes they'll think they're dying, but that's the general impression, and that's the general idea. If somebody comes at you, if you have one of the little half-ounce or three-quarter-ounce pepper sprays in your pocket or on your keychain, they're going to spray about 6 feet in a splattering stream. So you're going to want to aim directly at their face and go up side to side. You're going to move it around. You don't just aim and pull the trigger, push the button at the top. You swirl it around or move side to side. You want to coat them and empty that thing. Don't do a one-second spray. Empty it. Then drop it and get the hell out of there. Or, you know, do a little tap dance on their head or whatever you want to do. I personally just drop it and leave. We were in Vegas years ago, and we were in the parking lot, and it was dark. And I had parked about 100 feet away from most cars. And as my wife and I were getting in the car, these three black guys come up in the middle of the night. It's 2 in the morning, and these three black guys are walking up towards me. So I expected they weren't going to say, "Good evening, sir." I happened to have a 1 pound can of pepper spray in my door there, and I pulled it out, took off the safety. I said, "What do you need?" And they moved faster. I just emptied the can. I just emptied the can on them, dropped the can, got in the car, drove off. And I look back, and they're all three laying on the ground, coughing, gagging, puking, you know, all the neat things to watch. See, it's more fun to watch these people bounce around like a carp out of water than put a bullet in them, unless that's what you have to do. I mean, sometimes you might have to do that. But the chemical irritants is what they are, the pepper sprays, right? They come in different ways. They come, like I said, these little ones, the half ounce or the three quarter ounce will do a splattering spray. The larger ones, when you get into 2 ounce, 3, 4, 6, 9, 9 ounce, 1 pounders, those will spray a fog. And these fogs are usually about 2 to 3 feet in diameter, and they'll go 15 to 20 feet. Now, if you were to stand where there's no wind, by the way, and you spray one of these foggers, it'll look like it's it's done at about 15 feet. It's not. It's now atomized, and it's continuing to spread. So remember that. Here's some rule of thumb. Don't spray inside of a building unless you're on your way out. Because once it's sprayed in the building, it's going to be in there for days. And for that matter, don't spray in the wind unless you have to. There are times that you got to do what you got to do. So if somebody's coming at you and the wind's to their back, blowing at you, and you spray them, you're going to get hit with it too. But you might want to do that. You might want to hit them hard. And so what if you get a little peripheral? Remember that this stuff is not a toy. I had one idiot years ago buy some from me, and he decided to test it in his car in his ashtray. So he just went, pfft. This stuff is very powerful. Within seconds, he had to slam on the brakes and the car cleared out. I mean, it was bad. Now, here's another thing. I sold some to a nurse in Stockton, and she was telling me the story later. All vehicles have fresh air vents. The newer ones, you can't close. There's always air going in new cars. Whether you realize it or not, it's so people don't die of asphyxiation. So she gets off work at 3 in the morning. She's driving home on Highway 99. She sees in her mirror this car following her without any lights on. So she changes lanes, and the car changes lanes. She said she sped up to about 80, and the car sped up. The car is maybe, she was telling me, about 50 feet behind her. So she carried a 4-ounce pepper spray. It's a fog. She simply rolled her window down, stuck her hand out with the pepper spray, put it on the roof of her car, and sprayed and emptied the can, and then dropped the can on the roof. Within seconds, the car behind her started weaving side to side, and then it disappeared off to the side. So remember that, okay? Then you have that pepper spray, that's good, but then you have other things that you can use for non-lethal stuff. Stun guns are basically electronic pain instruments. They have two terminals on them, on the top. Some have safety, some don't. You push a button, and it has a capacitive discharge system inside that builds up the voltage, and the voltage could be from one 9-volt battery, and all of a sudden you got a million volts. Drains the battery pretty quick when you use it like that, and these are really light amperage, so it's not going to kill anyone. They're going to think they're dying, but it's not going to kill anyone. Doesn't affect the heart either. It's just subcutaneous, just under the skin. It's a muscle. It'll grab the muscle and contract it. So the bad thing about a stun gun is that you got to touch the person with it, not the skin. Stun guns will go through a half-inch thick leather jacket. So some guy's wearing a parka, you just jam it against him. It's going through and it's going to find his skin and it's going to complete the circuit. There are all kinds of different types of stun guns. There's cheap ones, there's expensive ones. The ones we have right now are cheap. They're $20 a pop, and they're rechargeable, as a matter of fact. They have a built-in plug. Slide it out, plug it in the wall, charge it up for 8 hours. Now, I don't know how well this will record, but this is the little one. It's called a quick stun gun. This is the one that's rechargeable. Now, let's see if I can get this to work. Well, I guess I can get that to work. It is way louder here than it went through the microphone, I can tell you right now. Now, a stun gun does double duty. The idea is you don't want to get into any problem with people. You don't want to get into a fight. You don't want to have to zap someone. It is a deterrent. I'm telling you now, I have pulled a gun on people who said, go to hell, and they kept coming. But I pull up a stun gun, and I just give it a little. Their mind changes right now because they know this will kill them. I stopped 12 gang members from beating up two little white kids in Sacramento, and I had a stun gun. Not this one. This is a good one. It'll knock you down, but the one I had is a commercial unit that was half an amp. It sounded like a .22 automatic going off. I tried to carry that again, by the way. It's called the Omega. The company can't get the parts to manufacture it because most of the plants that were manufacturing the internals are closed down for now. they say maybe at the end of October. I'll let everybody know, because those are the strongest, most effective stun guns ever made. But I can tell you this, with this little one, I had one like this years ago. I chased a German Shepherd down. Scared the hell out of them. They scare animals. This scares animals. They hear that noise. Oh, God, my cat's... So Felix lays in here, and I forgot he's in here. He lays in the studio while I'm recording, and he's sitting over there with this look on his face like, you son of a... You just woke me up. He does not like a stun gun.
Is he okay, Kitty?
No? Yeah, he's looking at me like, I know where you sleep. So you have different things that you can use as non-lethal weapons. Now, that's just a couple of them, too. Now, that's a stun gun. These are capacitive discharge units. Then you have tasers. Tasers shoot two little monofilament darts about 15 to 20 feet that embed themselves in your skin, and then the electricity is introduced subcutaneously that way. So a taser shoots darts out. A stun gun has two terminals on it, positive and negative. Tasers are going to run you $300 to $400. We might or might not carry them. It just depends, again, on availability. But a taser is a one-shot deal. You have a cartridge. Now, the original tasers were classified as firearms because they used two 22 caliber blanks. But that was done away with in the 90s, and a couple of brothers come out with this idea of compressed nitrogen. That's what all tasers now use, is nitrogen cartridges. So you have this cartridge that you put on the end of either it looks like a stun gun, or it looks like a pistol, like the police are carrying these special tasers that look like a pistol. And those usually have one shot. Some of the new ones have two shots. But then you take the cartridge off and you put another cartridge on it. So that's what a taser is. I don't care who or what you are. You get hit with one of those, you're going to go down. I've watched them, not with the normal ones, but they have some that are beefed up. I watched them take a bull, a 1,000-pound bull. They shot it in its side. It locked up and fell on its side. Just boom, down. So those, you got stun guns, you got tasers, you got pepper spray, and don't waste your time with anything other than pepper spray. There's a lot of other gases out there. And you don't want the foam at all. You want a splattering stream, which is what you're going to get with a half to three-quarter ounce, or you want a fogger. There's so many different weird ones out there. Keep it simple. Always remember the KISS formula. I even wrote a book once, is Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Pepper Spray or How Not to Get Hosed. And that's how State of California found out about me, and when I was down there. So remember stun guns, tasers. Well, there's other things you can get as well that are non-lethal. They can be lethal. I'm talking about walking sticks, canes. And as you know, Survival Enterprises up here in Hayden, we sell a line of walking sticks made by Cold Steel. They have no, they're not those ones that have the knives in them or the swords or any of that crap. No, we have fiberglass ones that look, they're very fine, very thin, have a good heft to them. They have 11 layers of fiberglass. You're not going to ever break these things, ever. Or we have the closed cell polypropylene, which look like shillelaghs. And different types of canes that they have different looks, but these things are invulnerable. You could beat a car to death with these things. My favorite one is the dragon head, and that's what I take with me whenever I go out. If I'm going to be accosted by somebody, I'm a hands-on kind of guy. I like to let them know that they screwed up, and I want them to learn not to do that again. So if I have a cane, one of these canes, and I poke you in the chest with it, you're going to hurt. And if I sweep your legs out from underneath of you, you're going down hard. And you're going to remember that. And this is the thing, and this is why we sell these. Not many people have the inclination to actually pull the trigger on a gun. You got a lot of people who say, yeah, I got all kinds of guns. Look at me, I'm carrying concealed. Look at the SIG I got. Look at the Glock I got. Look at this, look at that. And if the Schumer hits the fan, and they're accosted by three 17, 18-year-old thugs who are holding baseball bats, they might not pull the gun, or they might pull it and just threaten them with it while they get the crap beat out of them with baseball bats. But if you got, if you know you're not going to kill someone, this is not going to kill them. You know, you hit somebody with a cane in a kneecap, the elbow, the chest, the back, the knees, their feet. That's not going to kill them. It's going to take them out of the fight. You got a pepper spray or stun gun or something. You know, first thing you do is you hold it up, the stun gun, and you say, "Look, I don't want to go. I don't want to go toe to toe with you, but I will." That's going to scare them. That's going to make them think twice. Sometimes you can use pepper spray as a deterrent, but a lot of these guys are so arrogant that they actually think nothing's going to happen to them. Oh, I can just, it's not going to affect me. I've seen it too many times. I have seen it. So you have a whole thing. In my car, every one of my cars, I have pepper spray, I have a stun gun, I have a taser, and I also have a baton. Now, some of the cars I carry a cane, one of these canes. I'd rather have a 3-foot cane, to tell you the truth. But there's something called batons. These are different. You've seen police wear batons. Normally, it's a wooden stick with a side handle. Okay? You've seen those. Those you have to be trained in and know what you're doing with them. But if you do, they're very effective. And there's other batons. We sell some batons here in the store. These are expandable steel. They have three parts to them. They will expand out about 30 inches, but they compress down to about 8 inches. And you just flip with the flip of the wrist. It pops out, and now you've got a weapon. And yes, you can get trained on that too. YouTube has all of these training things. I'm going to have links up for this this section that we're talking about, non-lethal self-defense. I'm going to have links up for all of this stuff. There's even a, by the way, there's a pepper spray that you don't have to use. You actually hook it up in your home. And it's a burglar blaster is what it's called. I've got dozens of them, and I used to sell them years ago. It's a box that has a 4-ounce pepper spray in it, and there's a trip wire. And you run the trip wire across where if somebody opens the door, it's going to pop it, and then the pepper goes off. Now, they're not going to want to be inside that building, whatever building that is. If it's your house, well, you're not going to want to be inside of it either till it airs out. But I've known customers who have taken them, put them in their cabins up in the hills. Somebody tries to break in, boom, that cabin is inundated with pepper spray. Nobody's going in there. And it's been used in barns as well. Now, that's a tripwire one. These companies also have motion detector ones. It's like an alarm. It's a box that sits in your ceiling. And if somebody comes through there and that alarm goes off, there's four of those things, those cans that are going to dump the pepper spray. There's a bunch of them. I'll have links for it so you guys can play around and say, oh, look what I can get. All right, so the oregano oil's in. The immune boost is back in stock. Our immune boost is more effective than Tamiflu. So we have that in stock. Now, I did say last week we had the Ultimate Daily in stock. Well, that's gone. And it won't be coming back till the end of October. I'm telling you, anything you think you want to get, you better get. Because the ingredients to manufacture a lot of stuff is not there. The parts to manufacture a lot of things is not there. If you want something and it's available, so what if it costs a few extra bucks? You better buy it. That's the thing. And I tell people this. You know that little part in your brain that makes you think about something? I wonder if I should buy that. I had that removed at birth. So when I think I need to do something, it's done. When I think I need to buy something, it's done. And you guys need to be the same way. Don't go crazy. You know, I mean, don't go crazy. I've seen too much of that with the credit cards. So just remember that. All right. Anyway, questions? Give us a call, 800-753-1981. You want to see what we got? Go to SE1, Samuel Edwards, numeral 1, SE1.us or survivalenterprises.com. Go there, poke around, see what we got. Give us a call. and we'll talk to you later. Keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground. Situational awareness, ladies and gentlemen. Pay attention to everything around you, everything behind you, everything under you, everything above you. Nowadays, it's above you that can count also. I'll see you next time.